Hi, I'm Mike Maloney, and welcome to another CSRM podcast. Today's episode is hosted by Dr. Greg Linville.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another CSRM podcast. My name is Dan Stouffer, and I'm joined again with Scott Stedman and Dr. Greg Linville. And if you're watching this right after Thanksgiving, we want to say happy Thanksgiving. And we want to say how thankful we are for you and what you do in ministry and your partnership with us at CSRM and also what you do for the local church. And so we're continuing our conversation on the saving of sports ministry. And last time we were meeting on the podcast forum here, we were discussing chapter 6 of the book. And we kind of teased a couple things. And Dr. Greg, let's dive right back in. Tell us more about soteriology, why it matters, and then some of the obstacles of it when it comes to the local church.
Well, thanks. Great to be with you guys. And again, I hope everybody had a blessed Thanksgiving. And now that we're heading towards Advent, well, we really get to the matter of even this book, the why Jesus came and was born. It's in the book, it's soteriology or bust. And if we are not about bringing people into a personal relationship with Jesus, then we become like almost any other group in the world or the country. We're trying the best we can just to help people have a little better life. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But we have a specific mandate. It's called the Great Commission, to go and make disciples. But what I feel that we all share is that too often that has become one little aspect. There's one little aspect that we focus on. And we've said it the last few weeks, but we've got to say it again so we make sure people understand it. It's not enough just to have somebody say, "Jesus sounds pretty cool today. Oh, you want me to raise my hand? You know, like I'm accepting him as my Lord and Savior." But I have no clue about what that means. And so we really have to say what this whole book and what this chapter particularly is talking about is, what is our success statistics? What is it that we really can say that our ministry, our mission, our local church, our para ministry has been effective? When we say we've been effective, what does that mean? And I don't have the statistic right in front of me, but if all of those reports of all the hands that have been raised are tabulated, it's like more people than are alive. Mm-hmm. And I never will forget, at a particular youth camp, a young man came up to me, because every night they were saying at the camp, you know, "Give your life to Jesus." He says, "I've given my life to Jesus every night. What more do they want from me?" And that guy, depends on who might have prayed with him that night, would have said, "Yeah, there's another one," when it was all the same one. But was that guy even connected in the ways of going and making him a disciple? So that is as a foundation of what we're saying here. And so then we're trying to help local congregations. And a little bit later in the series, talk to some of our para-ministry brothers and sisters about, what are your success statistics? How do you know you're being effective? And you guys have comments so far?
Well, I think, Greg, I think it's a very important question for us to ask. I think helping people to count the cost, so to speak, of what it means to truly follow Jesus. I think we've mentioned this in other podcasts, to remind them that, hey, this is the starting line, not the finish line. This is going to be a daily thing where you're choosing to daily surrender, to daily deny yourself, to pick up the cross and follow Jesus. And so I think it starts with that teaching. It starts with really helping to have a moment where you can count something where someone is beginning that relationship. But then it's the follow-up. It's the it's getting integrated into something else. I think that's where a lot of sports ministries fall short. And so, again, I would just encourage people, count something and then help people to count the cost and then help them to integrate into something else within the church. Hopefully it's a relationship, not just a program, to help them along that journey as they continue to grow in their relationship with Christ.
So what this plays out, how it plays out in our local church is that in our sports rec and fitness, we go to what we call a philosophy that's just get a platform proclamation.
Yeah.
Here's how it works. We're going to use our youth leagues, for instance. And the idea is that you do 6 or 10 weeks of a youth league, basketball league, soccer league, whatever. And then at the end of that, you have some person, typically of some notoriety, either they're an elite athlete or coach that people recognize, or they have this great skill. They're a chalk artist and come in and do this unbelievable piece of artwork in 30 minutes. Or they can spin 19 basketballs on their body at one time. You know, there's something at the end of it, and that person gives a verbal proclamation about their faith and says, I accepted Jesus. I want you to as well. Are we against that? No, we love it. We understand it. We support it. We say, do it. But here's the thing about it. That platform proclamation of this elite athlete is something that is the first step, if you will, of making a disciple. It might even be the third or fourth step, because there's all kinds of other things that have led up to that. But it's not the end step. And so we can't just have platform proclamation. If that, however, if our theology, our level one theological truth, if our theology is that's evangelism, and that is fulfilling the Great Commission, then we gear philosophically, level two, we gear philosophically to organize our league in that way. But if we start with a level one soteriology, that it's not just a day's decision to raise your hand, but it's a dedicated disciple for life, then we change from that proclamation, a verbal proclamation, to what we call the 3R approach. The 3 R's are relational, repetitive, and redemptive. And what that means is that it doesn't happen just one day in one time, but it happens over, in fact, weeks, months, years, and sometimes decades. And this is the problem with a lot of our churches, or a lot of our congregations, is that they're not willing to do what it takes over a longer period of time to go and make disciples. Repetitive, yes, weekly. And then the weeks go into months, and then the months become a season, and then we need to do another season and another season. And they become years. And so repetitive. And now think about this. This totally secularized non-church non-believer, if you were to say to them, I want you to come to a Bible study for the next 2 years, chances are they're probably not going to do that. But if you say to them, I want you to come for the next number of months and years and come to the fitness class to help you stay healthy, or join this league, and now you're an adult playing softball, and you have a spring league and a summer league and a fall league, whatever, they probably are, they're more almost always more open to doing that than joining a Bible study or coming to a worship service. And so we have this tool, we have this methodology that really can work in this repetitiveness. And then in the repetitiveness, there's got to be relationships. And we know that it takes often 5 to 6 intimate relationships with believers in Jesus for that totally secularized non-church non-believer to actually come to faith. They have to see the gospel. They have to feel it. They have to understand there's something that these people have. They're not perfect. They're not always on top of their game. They have financial struggles. They get laid off. They get the diagnosis of cancer. Their teenager is rebellious. They see Christians, but they see something there, a peace, a joy, a commitment. There's something that's there. And so as they see that relationally over the years, repetitive, then it becomes redemptive, meaning that that is when that person has the opportunity to say to them, to invite them to have their lives turned over to Jesus, and Jesus redeems them. And that's why we say it's the 3R approach. So going back to square one now, if your theology says just get them to raise their hand, then you go that direction organizationally and then methodologically. But if you say it's go and make a disciple, then I'm going to change what I do organizationally and then methodologically, week by week by week. All right, you guys respond.
I think just one quick comment, then Sky, I'll turn over to you
Right.
for your thoughts. But I think that's why we use the term evangelistic disciple making at
Exactly.
CSRM, because it's all of that. And we would just challenge and encourage you to think through a process like that. Because if you don't have that, that's maybe why your numbers are very high when it comes to salvation, but you're not seeing a whole lot of dedicated disciples. So evangelistic disciple making.
Yeah, and I mean, I could speak from like a camp ministry perspective, is that everything was purely just like salvation, salvation, salvation. And a lot of times discipleship was always put on the local church to do the discipleship. And we draw a piece of paper saying, here's the decisions your children kids made at your church. Here you go. And sometimes people just didn't really, maybe there was always a disconnect with that. So a lot of times, we tried to make sure that we tried to build relationships as staff members, and even with our camp counselors as well, try to build this relationship with those kids, because sometimes you may be the one person that they're probably going to reach out to talk to if they have any questions about Jesus or any type of discipleship, even though they may not be attending your congregation, or they could be in a whole different section of Ohio than where you're currently at. But let's kind of keep that community. I think that's why a lot of times I saw so much not only salvations within camp ministry, but also a lot of discipleship happening too, because of that relational and people still feeding into people after the season was done.
So then it comes down to what do success statistics congregations believe? Those that are truly being effective. What do they believe, and what have they found to be true? And if people are following along there and they're on page 67, there's a list there. But it starts with a theological foundation that believes exactly what you guys just said, that evangelistic disciple making is a process, not a standalone event. Now, putting your faith in Jesus, yes, that's a day, that's a time. Although there are many people who I've encountered who can't point to a day or a time, like at that camp, Scott. They just kind of said, I just, it just kind of came about. I just started going to this church, or I started reading my Bible, or and they can't point to a particular time, but they it's more of a season, regardless of where you go with that one, that they believe these churches that are effective and successful, they believe that it is a process. It's a 3R: repetitive, redemptive, relational. And they start to plan their organization and their methodologies, their models, their outreaches around that. And that's the second thing. The first thing is they believe it's a process. The second thing, they build it in to their overall ministry and what they how they function. And then they the third thing is that they think that these relationships are best established and then enhanced through regular sports leagues, recreational activities, and fitness wellness. That just makes sense. If you're going to do it repetitively, they believe that they need to do this. They need to create this for their congregation. Now, I'm not going to name any churches, but I was at one recently, and they're doing a whole series of classes, 5 weeks, and they've invited their entire congregation to come in, and it's basically about witnessing. It has to do with how do you go and how do you share the faith. And what they're doing and what they're saying is good. They're helping the individual congregants face sometimes their fear about speaking about their faith. They're helping them give them words of, or maybe little hints on how to help them say those things in ways that are more people respond more positively. But here's the missing thing that that church hasn't got yet, is that they have not created the philosophical organizational methodologies that are in place that those parishioners can bring these people to. Because it's one thing for a person to sit as a teacher in a public high school or in a business meeting or wherever else they're at and feel guilty about not saying to the person sitting beside them or say to their students, you need to believe in Jesus. It's one thing for them to feel guilty about that. It's another thing to empower that person to be able to say, you know what? What is it that you like? What, how do you recreate? What do you really enjoy going doing? When you have leisure time, what do you want to do? And then the church create those kinds of opportunities for them to say, hey, you know what? You like to play board games? We have a game night in our church. Oh, you like to go to a fitness class? We've got those 5 days a week. Where? Well, we have it at the center. Where's the center? It's right inside our church. And when we produce these kinds of programmatic and recreational, physical, sports-related avenues, the person doesn't have to feel guilty about, hey, you need to believe in Jesus right now, but just relationally get them in a repetitive time where they can have more and deeper relationships with them. This is the third thing that churches that are effective know. The fourth thing is that in creating these areas, these opportunities, that they help those people know how to function within those so that they, in those times, can have evangelistic conversations while they're exercising, while they're playing, while they're bird watching, whatever it might be. There's a last thing that they know, and that is that congregational growth is not the same as evangelistic disciple making. Because congregational growth comes in two ways, oftentimes, that has nothing to do with actually reaching those who are far from Jesus and his church. It's biological growth. Somebody has a baby, and that baby grows up in that church. Are we saying that's bad? Absolutely not. We love it. But that's different than evangelistic disciple making growth. Or you get people that transfer their membership into your church. Now, warning to all of your churches, they're leaving a church for a reason. Sometimes it's because they're the best people in the world and they're going to really help your congregation. And they're leaving a dying and maybe even apostate church or denomination. But oftentimes they're coming because they don't like the sermon that was preached last week, or they don't like that somebody didn't, and you got another problem child on your hand. So biological growth or transfer growth is not evangelistic disciple-making growth. And too often, churches that grow, they grow for a while and they have a big fundraising campaign to build a bigger building. And then 10 years later, they're in decline and they're wondering what happened. It's because they were getting transfers. They weren't getting new birth. Your guys' thoughts?
I think those are very key challenges to think through, especially when it comes to that transfer growth, Greg. And that's why I think building relationships with other sports ministers in your community, because if you do happen to notice, hey, this person's coming from another church, ask why. What do you know about this person? And like you said, they could be the world's most wonderful person and you want them at your church, or they could be leaving a very unhealthy situation, like you were saying. And so you had to be prepared to disciple them further and to find healing and to re-engage with a church or a local church sports ministry. But be leery of those who are leaving for the wrong reasons, because if they were a problem at another church, then you should be prepared that they could be a problem in your ministry too.
And so soteriology or bust, you have to have a theology of what it means to go make a disciple. And then you have to have a philosophy of knowing how to put that into practice to allow this 3R, repetitive, relational, redemptive process to occur, that then you empower your local parishioners to not feel like they have to give the whole gospel in one setting at their place of work or school, but rather have these are great ways to get people involved and they start to experience the gospel. All right, I beat it to death, guys.
No, it's really good, Greg, and we are wrapping up. I would liken it to, it's almost like you're building scaffolding for your ministry. You're seeing the whole process. And I think when you take the time and you ask God for wisdom for these sorts of things in your local church sports ministry, then you'll start to think through all of these things. So final thoughts from everyone before we wrap up here today on chapter 6 on soteriology or bust. Any final thoughts?
I've said a lot, Scott.
I mean, if people have been listening to the last three podcast episodes, I mean, we've really been hitting soteriology. So if you don't get it by then, I don't know what else we could say to get you to get it.
Well, and I think it's a good place for us to close here. Just to remind everyone, you can purchase this book on our website, csrm.org, The Saving of Sports Ministry. If you're needing to watch this again, thank you for the model there, Scott. We encourage you, gather other people on your church staff, maybe some leaders, what we call local missionaries, some of your key leaders or volunteers. But again, we use the word local missionaries. Invite other sports ministers in your community. Consider hosting a roundtable, talking about these 3 R's, talking about building the scaffolding, talking about evangelistic disciple making, asking the question, what does true success look like? These are conversations we want you to have. And if we can help and serve you in any way, if we can provide some coaching, if we can help you get a roundtable started, please reach out to us through our website and we will be happy to connect with you. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you again soon. Take care.
The CSRM Podcast is a production of CSRM and their production house, Overwhelming Victory. Dr. Greg Lindell is the executive producer, and Scott Stedman is the associate producer and editor. To learn more about CSRM, visit csrm.org. For more information about Overwhelming Victory, visit overwhelmingvictory.org. The CSRM Podcast is the flagship member of the podcast network Overwhelming Victory Radio. For more information on Overwhelming Victory Radio, or to listen to our partner podcasts, visit overwhelmingvictory.org/OV Radio. For CSRM Podcasts, I'm Mike Maloney. Have a blessed day.